Daniel 12, verse 9, underlines the fact that this book has been written, its message focused to the time of the end. As Moffat translates time of the end, he uses the expression crisis at the close. The book of Daniel has special application to mankind right at the close of human history. The book of Daniel can be divided into 14 parts, 7 prophecies that tell you when to expect the crisis at the close, and 7 stories to tell you how to live when you reach the crisis at the close. 7 prophecies, 7 stories. I would suggest that you work them out in your own mind and see whether your 7 coincide with my 7. Which 7 prophecies would you find? And if you're still with me, we're alive and well later on, you will see whether your analysis coincides with the one that I will suggest. Daniel chapter 1 deals with the integrity of this prisoner of war, mutilated, bruised, beaten, his family slaughtered, his homeland devastated, hundreds and hundreds of miles away from every familiar sight, forced by a ruthless dictator to prepare himself to conduct shadow governments in satellite conquered countries. We see him there fearlessly resolved that he would not compromise his principles. And the principle was vegetarianism. Food, as we have seen, has been the principle in every crisis. The first sin that was committed after the perfect world was created was on the matter of eating. The first sin that was committed after the flood was on the matter of drinking. The first sins that were committed by Israel after the Exodus were on the matter of eating. And we can see every reform movement, final one mentioned specifically in the Bible by personalities, John the Baptist, coming back on this very simple thing: personality, will, surrender, relationship is depicted. One of the simplest methods an infant displays his individuality is by refusing to eat prunes. Or anything else, for that matter. You try to force feed an infant, and most of us have had experiences with sometimes catastrophic results. Individuality, personality, very simply displayed. So we get chapter 1. Daniel's principles of strict vegetarianism, no alcoholic beverages, enabled God to use his mind through his dedicated body till he was many, many times wiser than the rest of them. In chapter 2, almost two-thirds of the chapter, we followed the fortunes of the wisest men of Babylon that displayed their utter futility. They could not tell you what happened the night before in the nightmare of their king with a sword across the back of their necks or a noose round their throats. For the life of them, they couldn't tell you what happened yesterday. And so all their pretense of trying to tell you what is going to happen tomorrow or the next year or the next decade is thereby proved utterly futile. Daniel, again, simply prays. And as you study the book of Daniel, I would suggest that you concentrate on the effect of prayer. Over and over and over and over again, prayer is brought to our notice. And remember, Daniel is written for the crisis at the close. As a result of prayer and dedication, Daniel gained a perspective that enabled him to understand yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And as he expounded to the king that nightmare that he saw, the history of man was condensed in the image of a multi-metal man. Head of gold, Babylon, breast and arms of silver, Medo-Persia, the belly and the thighs of brass, Grecia, the legs of iron, Rome, the raveling out of the human body in the 10 toes, the raveling out of the Roman Empire into the concrete age, iron mixed with miry clay. Then a stone broke the whole, striking it at the feet, indicating it comes at the end. And then the miry clay and the iron and the iron and the brass and the silver and the gold became chaff. The figure is turned. The chaff is the residuum, the useless part of a harvest. The harvest is the end of the world, and the stone, which is the rock of ages, the head of the corner, the foundation, became a kingdom and filled the whole earth. Now we come to chapter 3. Nebuchadnezzar made an image all of gold. Now he was not satisfied to be the head of gold. He says there's going to be no inferior kingdom come after me. Nor after it, nor after it, nor after it. The whole is going to be gold. See, this is paralleling the Tower of Babel. God says, I am not going to destroy the world by a flood. And the people said, oh yeah, we don't believe it. We've got our own insurance policy. We're going to build a skyscraper and we'll be able to look down at the flood if it ever comes again. Disbelief of God, defiance of His will, their personal insurance policy, they were going to do it themselves. Nebuchadnezzar says, the whole image is going to be gold. Babylon is going all the way through. Whose height was 60 cubits and breadth 6 cubits. 60 is 60. And the breadth is 6. Now if you look at a man standing up, what is the proportion of my breadth with my height? Now this says 6 to 60. 1/10. Now I think you'll have to agree that the skinniest man you ever saw didn't have a proportion of breadth to height of 1 to 10. That would be skinny for a beanpole. Now, I have seen some modern art, I would put it in italics, in quotes, where the sculptor has done that. But I don't think Nebuchadnezzar was attempting that, which drives us into the corner, that this height of 60 cubits, 90 feet, included the pedestal. The width was 6, and if you say a man's width is just a little less than a third of his height, then you can get some idea of the height of the golden image. The 6 cubits was 9. It was probably 30 feet high on a pedestal that was 60 feet high. And so there's the image of a man, a 30-footer, on a pedestal that's 60 feet high, making a total 90 feet, 9 feet wide. A huge, colossal image, all covered with gold leaf. Now it says the whole image was gold, but there's not that much gold ever been mined, to my knowledge, since they started to mine gold to get into that kind of figure. So just like the furniture that speaks of the golden altar and the golden table, they were gold leafed, gold glued onto the surface. So this was image was all of gold on a very high pedestal at the top of the head, 90 feet away. And he put it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. I don't know whether it's ever possible to pinpoint exactly where it was set up, but all the country around Babylon is as flat as a plate. And so anywhere around there you can stick this thing up, you can see a 360-degree horizon. You don't have to stand on a camel's back either to see that. So in some of the flat places, and there are many anywhere around there, he put up this image, all of gold. Having done that, Nebuchadnezzar the king sent to gather together the princes, governors, captains, judges, treasurers, counselors, sheriffs, rulers of the provinces, to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. So everyone, everywhere in Babylonia, all the provinces, later on we discover that there were about 120 provinces, the next empire, so this covered a great territory, all the way from the Persian Gulf, right to the Aegean, to the Mediterranean, down to the Red Sea, anywhere you could go, all in the Fertile Crescent, the Middle East. And the princes, governors, captains, judges, treasurers, counselors, sheriffs, and all the rulers of the province were gathered together to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. They stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. He summoned them, they came. And then the herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations, languages." The emphasis is universality. This goes to everywhere, to everyone. "To you it is commanded that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flutes, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, all kinds of music, ye fall down, worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Whosoever falleth not down nor worshipeth, shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." So he had mass bands. I want you to get these points here. A symbol around which the whole nation was to rally. Universal proclamations to get everyone to gather together. And bear in mind my opening statement that the book of Daniel applies to the crisis at the close. There's the fun story, it's interesting to listen, we tell it to children, but it's far more important than that. This has its application to the last days, from now on out. So what he is trying to tell us is a picture he wishes us to form. A dictator, a world dictator, will form a symbol, a humanistic symbol. He will command all nations, all languages, all peoples to come together. Now, of course, they all couldn't come together on the plain of Dura. It's obvious that their representatives were there. With all their leaders. Then he was going to polarize them, their thinking, their activity, by starting with massed bands. If any of you have got memories long enough to go into the 30s, 1936, 37, 38, 39, do you remember the pictures that came out of Germany? News, films? In the late 30s, second half of the 30s, Nuremberg, sports, Platz, 100,000 people there, on a dais with all the lights focusing on him, the Führer, struts, all his arrogance and authority, salutes that great company, and 100,000 people shouting, "Sieg Heil." Can you hear them? I can hear them now. Like the waves of an ocean, "Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil," 100,000 voices in unison. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, mesmeric, hypnotic, polarizing. And then silence, and he speaks. When he dedicated that place, I can hear him now. "Look around. In 1,000 years, mankind yet unborn will say, 'What great people we Germans are.'" That's why, of course, Nuremberg was chosen as the place for the war crimes trials. Here we see massed bands. And when the massed bands sound, everyone will worship. Worship an image. Worship an image to Babylon. All of gold. All the world. "And whosoever falleth not down and worshipeth the image, The same hour shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Death's decree attached to the worship of the image to Babylon. Therefore, at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, the sackbut, the psaltery, and all kinds of music, now it'd be fun to take the names of these musical instruments. I don't know whether you are aware of the fact, but one of the major criticisms against the validity of the book of Daniel is that these musical instruments weren't in existence when Nebuchadnezzar is supposed to have been here. Of course, that's rubbish, but that's one of the suggestions. And what one needs to do is to do a little word study on each of them, archaeologically as well, and find out where they were, what they were. Now, I've asked you, when was the guitar invented? Well, you might say 1955. Of course, that wouldn't be so. Yamahas may have been, but there were guitars before that. Well, how far back can you go from guitar? What is guitar? Well, some people call it a zither. What is zither? Well, you might call it chitta. If you don't like chitta, you might say it plainly, chitara. And if you wanted to stop and say it, you would say it was chaitara. Any of you understand what I'm saying by chaitara? No one here. Mr. Harris is not here. He should be able to translate it. Che six. Ek, do, teen, char, panch, che, six. And tara is wire. A chetara is a six-string chitar from Sanskrit, zitha, gita. No problem at all. Sanskrit quit being talked 2,500 years ago. How far back was the chitara invented? Well, when they talked Sanskrit. It's a little bit before our time, isn't it? So they have done very little to it. They've changed the shape of its stomach. They have refined the shape of its neck. So what? They plonked it the same way 2,500 years ago. They're plonking it today. So when you start talking about the etymology of musical instruments, very few musical instruments are new. Very few. When there are major breakthroughs, somebody invents a musical instrument. And so these musical instruments, if you do some study, there's no problem attached to them. But I don't plan today to try to go into them. They were known for thousands of years. Therefore, at what time when the people heard the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, the sackbut, the psaltery, and all kinds of music, all the people, the nations, and the languages, see, all the people, the nations, the language, universal. On one side, the everlasting gospel goes to all nations, tongues, and people. On the other hand, the image to Babylon goes to all nations, tongues, and people. Fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. End of chapter 1. Now chapter 2 in Daniel chapter 3. Wherefore at that time certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. The Jews represent God's people. Of all the nations on the face of the earth in Daniel's time, the Jews were God's people. They were the called of God. They were the ecclesia of God. They had been called out of Babylon. They had been called out of Egypt. They made mistakes, but so what? May I see the hands of all those who have never made a mistake? But they were still God's people. Now they are accused. See, there's an image to Babylon. There's a universal call to worship that image. There's a polarization of all thinking to bow down in adoration to that image. And there's a death decree forcing the worship to the image of Babylon. And there are Jews. Came near and accused the Jews. And spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. That's what he was trying to do. Golden image. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, the sackbut, the psaltery, the dulcimer, and all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. See, it becomes a legal thing. It's not a rightness or the wrongness whether this should be worshipped, but there's a law on the statute book. And the law on the statute book says everyone must worship the image to Babylon. You made a decree. And whosoever falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews, not all of them, certain Jews. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. Now they become specific. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. These three men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor do they worship the image which thou hast set up. The book of Daniel has been written for the crisis at the close. If we didn't have anything else in the Bible, Daniel chapter 3 tells us there's going to be an image to Babylon. That all the world is going to be commanded to worship the image to Babylon. That a death decree is going to be made, slaying all those who do not worship the image to Babylon. And that then there will be certain accusations made against certain of God's people who maintain their integrity and refuse to worship the golden image. And they are accused of not regarding thee. What does that mean? They are disloyal. They are treasonous. They are traitorous. It will become treason. It will become traitorous to refuse to worship the image to Babylon. They do not serve thy gods. They worship differently. They worship to a different drummer. They sing anthems to a different choral director. And specifically, they refuse to worship the image to Babylon. See the line of attack? You see the curtains drawn aside? Can you look into tomorrow? Can you understand? There's going to be an image to Babylon. Whatever that means, we can define from the Bible. There's going to be an image to Babylon. A gleaming golden image to Babylon, to a golden age and a golden head. All the world is going to bow down. All men are going to shout, Sieg Heil, or Hail, or whatever they say. And the burning, fiery furnace is there. For those who refuse, and certain will be accused. They don't regard the government, they're not interested in the king, they don't accept the behests of their rulers, they don't agree with law and order, They are breaking the statute requirement for this present time that is necessary to unite and polarize all mankind for the good of all mankind. They don't worship the same way. First of all, they're anti-government. Then they're anti-ecclesiastical. They don't worship the same way. Then they don't accept the symbol of unity, the image. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, two extremely strong words, no make-believe disturbance, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. And they brought these three men before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar spake unto them and said unto them, Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? See, he looked right through it. This is a matter of worship. It's a worship of the image of Babylon, or it's a worship of God. Clear distinction. Don't you worship my gods? Now, if he be ready at what time he hear the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, the sackbut, the psaltery, and the dulcimer, all kinds of music, he fall down, worship the image which I have made, well. But if he worship not, he shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Who is that God that will be able to deliver thee out of my hands? Now they've come face to face with the decision of their lives. On the one side is the fiery furnace, an apparent certain death, if they worship the true God. On the other side, they can fit in with the mass of the population, fall down and worship them. Well, let's stop a moment there and look at this picture. Did they have to fall, stand up when the rest fell down? Now, what could they have done? Well, I sometimes think if I had stood there, I could have said to myself, now, Les, you don't have to worship that image. Why don't you kneel down and worship God? Who'll know? Just get down with the rest of them. And you can think about God, and you can worship God, and you can honor Him, and do what He wants to do, what He wants you to do. But what witness would that have given to the people to the right and the left and the front and the back, when they knew Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego worshiped the true God? They would have given a lie to their whole faith. They would have given a lie to the whole worship of God. They could not do it. And what is more, they did not do it. Integrity, unshakable loyalty are extremely valuable traits. They are displayed by Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in this wonderful word picture of the crisis at the close of history. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, as he dealt with them, gave them an option to change. If you want to worship, I'll give you another chance. Think it over. Now notice the response. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said unto the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. Now what they are saying is, we do not need to exercise caution and care to give you an answer. We thought out the answer long ago. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the fiery furnace. And He will deliver us out of thy hand, O King. But if not, be it known unto thee, O King, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Now that is a tremendous statement. Not only did Daniel purpose in his heart that he would not eat the meat or drink the alcoholic beverages, these three men had purposed in their hearts that they would not bow down to this image, nor would they serve the gods of Babylon. They had made up their minds before. So when they came for trial, they didn't have to rethink anything. We don't have to exercise care, we've thought it out. When the image of Babylon is made, and all the world is commanded to worship the image, have you made up your minds what you're going to do? By the grace of God? Have you given it a thought? These three men certainly had careful thought. They knew exactly what they were going to do and exactly what they were not going to do. They had decided that they were not going to pretend that they were worshipping the image, bow down, give the appearance that they were when they were really worshipping the true God. They were going to let their colors show. And when brought before the judge who held in his hands their life and destiny, be it known to thee, O king, we will not bow down nor worship the golden image. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his face changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 1/7 times more than it was wont to be heated. There was going to be a fiery furnace hotter than there ever had been a fiery furnace. A time of trouble worse than any time of trouble since world began. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trials that try you, as though some strange thing happened unto thee. This is not going to be an ordinary fiery trial. It's going to be 7 times any ordinary fiery trial. Most fiery trials are worse in anticipation than in realization. But this fiery trial can never be imagined. It is 7 times hotter than there ever had been any fiery trial since fiery trials were invented. And he commanded the most mighty men, the men of strength, that were in his army. Notice, this becomes a military campaign to exterminate those who refuse to worship the image of Babylon. At a time when fiery trials are 7 times hotter than any time that there have been fiery trials until that time. And these strong, mighty men that were in his army bound Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the midst of the fiery furnace. They went into it. They went into it bound, hand and foot. Then these three men were bound in their coats, their hosen, their hats, their other garments. Hosen, by the way, is the plural of hose. It isn't hoses, it's hosen. So each of us has got a pair of hosen on. Only we don't call it hosen today. Isn't that a nice word, 1611, hosen? I'm sorry we've dropped it out. I'd like to be able to use it at other times than I'm talking about Daniel 3:21. So they had their coats, their hosen, their hats, their other garments. Notice, they are fully clothed. Fully clothed. The last description that is given of the saints of God is that they are fully clothed. Revelation 19. Granted that she might be arrayed in all her clothing. I want to underline this. The first time we see mankind after the fall, he is naked. When mankind gets under the control of the devil, he's naked. It takes the whole plan of salvation to clothe him. And the last thing that is done when the King of Kings returns is to look upon his people clothed, fully clothed. He has provided for them clothing, coats, hosen, hats, garments, fully clothed. Now they are bound, hand and foot, thrown into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And they were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. They didn't escape it. They were right in the middle of it. Right in the middle of it, with all the heat all the way around them. 7 times hotter than there ever had been a fiery furnace until that time. And these 3 men, having decided before what they were going to do about the image to Babylon, and about the death decree, and about the need to worship, were fully clothed, but bound, and thrown into the midst of the fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Get the picture? The executioners perished at this time of fiery trial, 7 times hotter than there ever had been a fiery trial. And these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Fell down bound. Get the picture of that? No sin in falling down. None whatever. They fell down. They were bound. They were in the midst of the fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished. I like that word too. Today we'd say astonished. He was astonished. And rose up in haste and spake and said unto his counselors, did we not cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered, true, O king. He said, lo, I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire. They have no hurt, and the form of the 4th is like the Son of God. How did he know? Well, Daniel had already given him Bible studies. That's how he knew. When Daniel had gone in for his oral examination, he had used them for other purposes. When Daniel had talked to him about the nightmare that he had, middle of the night one night, and gave him a whole picture of the dream image, and told him about the stone that was the Son of God, that would come and strike the image and set up his kingdom. What does he look like? Daniel evidently knew. And now Nebuchadnezzar knew. The form of the 4th is like the Son of God. Now what had happened? The only part of those 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that were destroyed by this time of unparalleled trouble were the bonds that bound them to the earth. So let that by again. The only part of these 3 men that was consumed were the bonds that bound them to this earth. Now there comes floating into your mind that passage in Great Controversy that speaks of Jacob's trouble and its purpose to separate us from the last ties that tie us to this planet. So that was a trouble with Lot's wife. The harpoon string was still in Sodom. She had to turn back. The ties that tied her back to her homeland were not severed. She looked back. No man, having put his hand or his whatever you want to the plow or to the journey and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of heaven. There are fun things in life. There are interesting relationships. There are bonds that tie us to this earth. Somehow God has got us to leave this earth without a regret. The last ties that bind us to this earth are destroyed by the time of trouble greater than any time of trouble before it. The time of Jacob's trouble. Sometime I'd like to go through Jeremiah, like we're going through Daniel, and we'll focus there on Jacob's trouble. Jeremiah is the one that explains it. It didn't affect these men's clothes. Their cloaks and their hosen and their hats and their outer garments unscathed. That robe that the saint wears to move into the time of unparalleled trouble will be untouched. Untouched. Notice what we are told in verse 27. Not a hair of their head had singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. Can you read the sign language of the Bible? Not a hair singed. No heat stains. No smell of burning on those robes of fine linen, clean and white, woven in the loom of heaven, in which there is no thread of human devising. And now we see them walking. Their bonds are gone. They are masters of the situation. The flames rage around them, beautiful and dancing and changed, and they are unaffected. And what is more, Jesus appears in their midst. An image to Babylon, a death decree, a challenge that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego do not believe in law and order, that they are against the state, that they are bringing about disunity and disharmony. And they are not interested in ecumenism. They are not interested in worshipping the way everyone else worships. And they are not ready to bow the knee. And the furnace fire is increased, and it's stoked, and its fury is enhanced, till the time of fiery furnace is worse than there ever was. And these three men, fully clad, trusting in Him who called them, abound only in a moment to allow the bonds to disappear as ropes of straw. They're free at last, untied to the world, with not the finest silken cord binding them to anything of the earth. Now they are ready to see Jesus. And Jesus appears in the midst of the time of trouble, such as never was since there was a time of trouble. He appears in the midst of the fiery furnace, heated seven times hotter than any fiery furnace before it. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Did we not see three bound? Now there are four walking, untouched. Then Nebuchadnezzar came to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come forth, come hither. Most High God, El Elyon. Wonderful combination. Wonderful revelation. The names of God in the Bible are like stained glass windows through which we can look and see colors, splendid colors, otherwise not discernible. Do you remember when El Elyon, Most High God, first appeared in the sacred story? And there met him Melchizedek. Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of El Elyon, Most High God. The first revelation of El Elyon is in conjunction with a priest. A priest who meets the proto-patriarch triumphant in the primal war. Get the picture? The first war, a saint of God triumphant, met by a welcoming Salem priest, who himself breaks bread and serves. Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, Jesus said, and saw it and was glad. Most High, it's a superlative. It's used always in this form to describe highest among like things. Never would a Hebrew say, here is a molehill, there is a house, there is a mountain. The mountain is most high. No. If there was one molehill here, another molehill here, another molehill here, he said, this molehill is the most high, when he compares it to like things. There's a house here, a house here, and a house here. This one is the most high house among these. There's a mountain here, and a mountain here, and a mountain there. That mountain is the most high mountain. There was a baker with a basket here, and a basket here, and a basket here, and a most high basket that the birds of the air took the buns from. Remember the story of Joseph and the baker? The most high basket? El Elyon, the most high God, the highest among like. Are there any other gods that he's the highest among them? Yes. You. And I. He's not ashamed to call us brethren. He doesn't mind sharing with us the divine nature. Beloved, it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him. He's bone of his bone and flesh of his flesh. He will grant that we will sit with him on his throne, even as he is overcame and was set down by his Father on his throne. Jesus will put his arms around the human family. Brothers and sisters, members of the divine royal family, and he himself, head and shoulders higher. El Elyon. The only way this becomes possible is through the incarnation. For as much then as children are partakers of flesh and blood, he himself also took part of the same, that he might be a faithful high priest. Melchizedek, the priest of El Elyon. The secret of the Most High is the treasured revelation of the Incarnation. The Incarnation. That God should come and assume humanity. Gather into his nature forever humanity. And gather to his heart and to his Father's home all of humanity who want to go, who love him enough. Servants of El Elyon. He had seen there the form of the fourth like a son of the gods who had assumed humanity. He knew. He was a good student. Daniel had expounded to him. Now he could see. He could recognize. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of El Elyon, come forth. Come hither. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth amidst of the fire. The princes, the governors, the captains, the king's counselors, being gathered together, I can imagine them clustering round them, saw these men, upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was a hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed upon them. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who had sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. These things have been written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come. This story will meet its fulfillment, its consummation, in the crisis at the close.
This story will be enacted this way in the last days. Revelation chapter 13 describes the image to Babylon. Revelation 13 tells us that the worship of the image to Babylon will be enforced by a death decree that will be preceded by economic sanctions. What is Babylon? Hold your finger here and turn back to the book of Genesis. Lord first mentioned Genesis chapter 10. Genesis 10 verse 8 mentions Nimrod, who began, the beginning of his kingdom, verse 10, was Babel. Or as the margin says, Babylon. What did he do? Chapter 11, with his henchmen, he built a tower. And at that time, we are told, the name, verse 9 of chapter 11, was Babylon. What is Babylon? Babylon is a humanistic edifice to escape the limitations of this planet and to defy God. That's what Babylon is. It's a humanistic edifice. Philosophical, religious, ecclesiological, whatever you want to call it. It's ecumenical in nature. It's worldwide. It's a system, it's an edifice that is humanistic. We are told that instead of stone, they took bricks. What's the difference between a brick and a stone? One God made and the other you made. Human resources. Substitute building resources, if you will. To build an edifice that will enable human beings to escape anything that is going to come upon the world by way of catastrophe or destruction. That's Babylon. A human system, a human edifice, erected of substitutes, disregard of God, defiance of His will, making all kinds of subterfuges to stretch up to heaven with all that that connotes for continuous eternal existence and defy any kind of trouble that might come. Revelation 13 tells us that there will be such an image. That its worship will be enforced first by economic sanctions and then by a death decree. That those who refuse to worship it will be accused of being against law and order. Will be treasonable. Will be against the state. Will be against national unity. Will be against the economy. Ecumenism of worship. And those who survive this time of unparalleled trouble will have made up their minds before it comes what they are going to do. And will face it fully clothed with the garments that are provided in Revelation chapter 19. Fine linen, clean and white, the righteousness of saints. Fully clothed. And when they are flung into it, the only beneficial effect that that will have is to burn the bonds. The last bonds that prevented them standing up in the face and worship of the Son of God who comes in glory. This is the picture. This is the preparation. Daniel 2 tells you when. We go from Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, the disintegration of the Roman Empire, the coming of the kingdom of Christ, the rock, and the establishment of His kingdom. And when the stone strikes and there is harvest and there is threshing and there is winnowing and there is sifting and the chaff is driven away and there is a time of furnace heat, hotter than there ever was a time of trouble, the Son of Man is going to appear. He's going to appear with His dear ones. He's going to vindicate them, honor them, glorify them, and reveal Himself at the crisis at the close. Daniel 2 tells us when. Daniel 1 and 3 tell us how. How are you going to prepare for that? Daniel 1 starts with the diet. Vegetarianism, no drink. Chapter 2, prayer, trust. Chapter 3, and having done all, to stand. Put on, therefore, the whole panoply of God, the whole armor of God, from your hat to your shoes, from your hosen to your capes. Get the sword of the word and the shield of faith. And having done all, stand. And the God of heaven will vindicate. The God of heaven will vindicate. What more do we need to know? This is the promise. If we will resolve today, the victory of tomorrow, he guarantees. Let's pray. Eternal Father, we thank thee for this matchless story, written in ancient Babylon 2600 years ago, whose focus is to today and tonight. In that lurid, flickering, fierce flame of that furnace in the long ago, we discern the means in the last moments of time that will burn the last bonds that will bind God's people to this earth as a prelude for the revelation of the Son of God. Fulfill thy design, we beseech of thee, in our lives. We love thee, we serve thee, and give ourselves to thee tonight, body, soul, and spirit. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
This has been another classic sermon from the Archive of American Christian Ministries. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.AmericanChristianMinistries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.